Hey, Jay.
Hey, Larry. How are ya?
Another day, another half dollar.
Is it another day? What day is it?
I don't know.
Oh, man.
Is it a day that ends in day?
I think so.
Yeah.
Some things. I know we haven't talked about work a lot lately. It's been a little crazy.
Yeah.
There were some experiments, and I think we may have accidentally sucked, like, a month or two out of time.
Oh, God, again?
Yeah. A couple of circuits went haywire, and I think we've all lost a month or two. So I'm sorry, everybody.
It's like the Gregorian calendar all over
again. I know. I mean, we can't really tell anyway. Maybe didn't, but it got me thinking about aging and the passage of time and finding myself suddenly a bit older than I'd been moments before.
Right. Oh, I get that. I'm getting more gray hair.
Yeah.
I hear it adds, like, a handsomeness to me.
It does. Yeah. You got a silver fox thing going. You like it. We like it.
Me and Anderson Cooper. Passage of time.
Yeah. How do speculative fiction
deals with passage of time?
Yeah.
Well, I think that's great, and the immediate thing that pops into my mind, and I think it's the greatest passage of time scene, is in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
So good.
When Bones is visiting a sad William Shatner / James T. Kirk at his house on his birthday.
On his birthday.
With some Romulan ale.
Yeah.
And
a copy of A Tale of Two Cities.
Oh, no, no.
Oh, no.
Spock already gave him that.
Oh, right.
And Spock claimed, no, there's no meaning. Just it's your birthday. Whatever, Spock. You know there's meaning.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
Happy birthday. Anyway, but Captain Kirk, of course, is feeling old and creaky, and Bones hands him
glass. He's not a captain. He's an admiral.
He's an admiral, and his home is in an apartment in the mid-80s of the 23rd century.
He's not flying around from starship to starship anymore.
And Bones utters this great line, "Everyone else has birthdays. Why are we treating yours like a funeral?"
Yes.
And what I love about that scene is, like, it's really getting to the thematic nature of this particular movie. But it also works so well because there was this TV show that had happened prior.
Yep.
There was the animated show that had happened prior. There was another movie that happened prior. So there was all this weight behind that line that these characters had grown old in front of our eyes.
Right, like history. And that's really important, that the characters had actually aged.
They'd
gotten James older. T. Kirk was an older human being than he was in the original Spacey.
Yeah.
And all of those years, at least I think within Universe, pretty much unfolded, naturally.
I feel, yes and no. There is hints that after Star Trek the Motion Picture, this is other stuff, that they went on a second 5-year mission.
Right, but I mean, that still
fills
in the time.
Does.
That what, from 66 to 83 is roughly the length of time, and that's the age that they are. And it's so rare because, you know, most other pieces of science fiction, fantasy, whatever, either takes place over a relatively short period of time.
Yeah.
Or takes place in sort of an ever-present now.
Yeah. Or they just ignore passage of time altogether. Like, for example, a brief side note. It wasn't until Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, that they actually kind of on-screen said what century Star Trek took place in.
Oh, right.
Because Nick Meyer, director and writer of Star Trek II, was like, what century does this take place in? And they're like, it's this one. And they've never said it. That's why in the opening of Star Trek II, it says in the 23rd century.
Really?
It's the first time.
I did not realize that.
Yeah.
I always thought, and that may have just been the supplemental materials for.
Yeah, I think it was the supplemental materials, because they always use star dates.
Right.
In the TV show and in the prior movie and in the animated series, I'm not sure. So they would always kind of say, like, if they time traveled, we're from 200 years or whatever.
Right.
Or whatever. But, like, until Star Trek II, they never actually specifically said
the 23rd
century. The 23rd century.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, we can talk a bit more about Star Trek, because there is another thing, especially in terms of aging, that is funky about the Star Trek universe.
Yeah.
Less so about the Star Wars, from a technical sort of point of view, seeing as so much of it is lived, so much of the characters' lives are lived traveling faster than light.
Yeah. But before we get to that, I want to bring up, like, kind of not acknowledging the passage of time.
Right.
and I'm going to say the original Star Wars trilogy.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, both the prequel and the...
Oh,
and
my
the,
God.
That, like, how much time has passed between Star Wars and Empire? I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, they're never clear.
They're never clear. Was it... I mean, it's not 6 months later, I assume.
Maybe.
But it could be.
It could be. It could be as little as 6 months. It could be 2 years.
Yeah, it could be 2 years. It could be the time from release to release.
I mean,
it's never acknowledged.
That's largely the implication of the way the movies are structured, is that, like, the time between the releases is the length of time.
I don't get... that sense, because I think about, like, Han Solo, like, I got this bounty on my head, like...
Right.
Like, it doesn't seem like, you know, well, but I guess in Star Wars... No, he had it in Star Wars, he had the bounty.
Yeah, he had the bounty in Star Wars.
So, like, he checked out this bounty for 3 years, like, he's not, like...
Maybe, but he was with the Rebellion, and, like...
And then there was what happened to him on Ord Mantell.
Which one was Ord Mantell?
Ord Mantell is... Well, he mentions it in Empire Strikes Back. Oh,
right.
But there is an audio story of what happened on Ord Mantell.
Oh. Wait, did that go away in the expanded universe, though?
Probably.
Yeah.
All I know is, I still have that audio tape.
Wow.
So... If you can find me a tape deck.
You are the king of the nerds.
I can... Oh.
It's all right. Someone has to be king.
Can I be Viceroy?
Viceroy. Rear Admiral. But yeah, the Star Wars universe and the passage of time and aging is really terrible. They are legit straight up terrible.
Yeah.
I was talking to someone about it, and they mentioned that weird little bit at the end of the third prequel. For the purpose of this conversation, where we will acknowledge the prequels. And that is solely for purposes of this conversation.
You realize if we ever talk about Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, it is a prequel.
I know. We all know what we mean by the prequels. So, but they did talk about someone mentioned that weird scene at the end where we're introduced to Owen and his girlfriend, Beru.
when you were saying the weird scene at the end, I thought you meant the...
No, that's a terrible scene at the end.
Oh, well, see, that to me is just the...
It's not even in the end. It's in the middle. It's when it's right before...
It's at the middle of the end.
It's right before Anakin goes and slaughters a bunch of sand people.
Right.
Which, for some reason, gets Padme really hot for him.
Yeah, well, you know.
Because they've got a messed up relationship.
A freak.
But he meets Owen and Beru, who look to be in their late teens.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's Joel Edgerton, and he was young, and he looks
certainly
sort of
fresh-faced. Yeah, certainly no older than the 20s.
And somehow, 20 years later, he's like 60. Life on Tatooine is hard, man. They put some real road years. Not even Luke is maybe 18 in that first movie.
Yeah.
No more than 20.
But he's got to at least be 20.
Yeah.
For it to be 20 years later.
Yeah. So, it's pretty dicey. It's pretty, they're a little, they fudge things a little bit there.
Yeah. I think they're unconcerned with it.
Utterly.
And I think where, like, with Star Trek, and specifically the original cast, that... They're taking advantage of something that this is a franchise that has existed for a period of time. You know, that in a way that Star Wars couldn't. And I don't even feel like... It's funny because, like, well, we have obviously Force Awakens.
Right.
And there's some kind of sense of passage of time, obviously, because Harrison Ford is old, Carrie Fisher is old, Mark Hamill is old.
And no, there is a sense of... And that is built into it. Like, that's part of the world of it, but it is still
It feels unmentioned. It feels un...
It's like, unspecific.
It's unspecific, yeah.
It's an unspecific length of time from the end of the Galactic War to the beginning of The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Because Rey looks to be maybe 16?
I would have said 19? Like, I would say 19 or 20.
But she could be... She could be anywhere in that range. She could be 17, she could be 22.
She could be 30.
And, But, you know, she's been dumped on Jakku since she was maybe 6, and you're like, how does this... Yeah. How much time has passed here?
Yeah, I mean, they're obviously not, you know... I hope in the next one, actually, they kind of deal with a little bit of the death of Han Solo.
Yeah,
and a little bit of the mortality of the characters.
Yeah.
Because I think it's an interesting thing. I mean, it's a fairy tale. Star Wars is a fairy tale.
Right.
Except for the prequel trilogy, which is a political drama.
It's just a terrible, terrible political drama.
Yeah, it is no West Wing.
No.
But it's just it's interesting that like
the wow, That's a great parody that someone should make.
The West Wing is
Star Wars as the West Wing.
Someone get on that.
Someone get on that.
We're not. Because there's also I was also thinking about it too of the scene with Bones and McCoy, Bones and Captain Kirk, because there's also a similar scene in Star Trek Beyond.
Yeah,
the subject's a little different of it because
it's a little
more,
tighter.
It's more about that scene with Bones and Kirk on Kirk's birthday.
Yep,
is more about I'm tired of being out in outer space.
Right,
which I kind of get, but like. The problem for that scene, in some ways, is we only have a quick montage
to show.
Well, and then we're like,
but this has been and I'm trying
to.
This is the problem of the Kelvin timeline and the problem of those three movies.
Yeah, and
I liked Beyond very much.
Uh-huh.
And I liked the first one very much.
I like the first one a whole lot.
I have very 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 very. Very dark feelings towards Into Darkness,
right?
Which
is good because it's dark. And
which
it's
is a podcast in and of itself. But I feel like the biggest weakness of all three movies, is that they are built on a sense of nostalgia that is totally unearned.
Yeah,
that the thing about the original series, the original set of movies, even Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, all of those are all part of one continuous
tapestry.
Continuum. Then, time moves within it, and things exist in relationship to each other in a way. And a lot of it is built on you, as the viewer, have been watching this for 30 years.
Yeah.
And we can rely on that, whereas the Kelvin timeline movies, as they're calling them, don't earn it, but still keep trying. Like, Beyond felt the closest, because at least it was the third movie, with these characters, that scene being about do I want to keep doing this?
Yeah.
Feels more earned than where they tried to go to in Into Darkness in terms of our feelings for these characters.
Yeah, I mean, I with the first one, I don't have a negative feeling about the sentimentality because it's kind of we're introducing the world, we're introducing the thing, and I have to say wholeheartedly one of the things that I dearly love, actually, about the three Kelvin movies is the cast. I think the cast...
They
have
great.
Such a great synergy amongst them.
Yeah.
You know, that they're so charming. And I'm going to say, I don't know why Chris Pine isn't, a bigger star.
I don't know why either.
Because I think he's really...
He's really good.
He's just this really... he's got the same kind of, acting presence of, Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Have that sound derogatory. I think he's really, really good. And there's a movie called Stretch.
Which I've been meaning to watch for years.
He is incredible in it, because he's totally, this insane rich guy.
Oh.
It's great. He's fantastic in it. One of the things that I kind of... I enjoyed at the time of Beyond, but then also I was like, meh. Because again, I am in this place where, sentimentality... relying on sentimentality as the vehicle for story kind of bugs me a little bit personally. And so kind of all the mentions of prior Star Trek episodes, the green hand in space and all of those things, I was like, I almost feel like it doesn't do the cast themselves any justice, because then we're constantly thinking about the old TV show and the old actors.
Right. Well, it's the
rather than this cast, which is actually really, really good cast.
Right.
It's one of the first reboots that I can think of that was like, this is a great cast
for
this reboot.
Yeah, it really is. They're solid all the way around.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like that's the lazy version of fan service.
Yeah.
Is when you just sort of jam those things in so that the fans have that feeling opposed to earning it through storytelling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I felt that way about the Star Wars prequels. I feel like the bits of the references and the this is how this happened for the original trilogy felt more jammed in there than the visual references in The Force Awakens,
right?
Which often to me felt more natural and part of this story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you know,
just to switch gears a little bit, let's talk about Star Trek Beyond all day. Marvel,
right?
Marvel comics. Now, Marvel and DC, they kind of deal with their characters aging in a different way.
They both, they deal with, each of them deals with them in different ways.
Right. Isn't that what I said?
Well, the way you said it implied that they dealt with them in the same way.
Oh.
That was different than other things.
It's because I'm drunk. and well, that missing month that, you know,
yeah,
your
that's,
boss...
Yeah, that's
really
my fault. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. There was a lever. There was a button. I shouldn't have pressed it.
It was
it
a
was
button.
All
you
me.
Have to push the
but
button.
Yeah, listen.
Anyway, so Marvel, they have what they're calling a sliding time
right.
scale. Because I think actually up until they're this all new, all different...
Yeah.
Let's call this a reboot.
This is probably the most official reboot. But they have rebooted characters before...
Yeah.
And, like, updated backgrounds.
Yeah.
You know, they updated Iron Man's
yeah,
background
yeah.
to match
kind of,
the movies more.
Well, and they kind of... So what we mean by the sliding time scale is, you know, when Iron Man first started in the early 60s, he was in Korea when he got his injury.
Right.
Well, you know, as we kept moving forward in time, Korea is further and further in the past.
Right.
So now It was Vietnam.
There was a time when it was Vietnam.
And then now it's,
Afghanistan. And, like, what they really mean by it is events actually happen sort of in relation to each other.
Yeah.
So
rather than a specific date in time.
Exactly. So Professor Xavier's School for Gifted Youngsters has always been founded about 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And so that's the relationship of things. Peter Parker got his powers about 5 years ago,
yeah.
always. You know, it's or
which things get fuzzy with that, because, like, okay,
yeah.
so if he got it 5 years ago and he was in high school.
Yeah.
So he's 23 now, and, like, in the comic books.
And that's the thing, he, like, lived for a long time, he was in high school, and then he left high school, and now
college.
High school is always, like, high school is always a few years ago.
Yeah. But he's, like, an owner of, like, this corporation.
Well,
this is
a new, with the all new, all different post the new Secret Wars. They have, you're right. They have most officially rebooted
yeah.
the timeline.
Yeah.
And made some significant changes. Whereas yeah. generally their big events have been, like, even if they involve character deaths or whatever,
yeah.
have always been within the Marvel now.
Yeah. Yeah. Because what's for both Marvel and DC. You know, you can't have your character age in real time.
Right.
Like, because then Superman would, what, be...
100?
120?
Right. And I feel like Marvel... you know. I mean, Marvel let their characters sort of age to adulthood. And they've
yeah.
dealt sort of with aging, but not really.
Not really. Unless they wanted to get rid of a character.
Right.
Like Nick Fury.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, like,
they
okay,
aged
now,
him out.
They aged him. Well, because that's right, because Nick Fury... He had some sort of serum.
Right, that kept him young.
That kept him young. Because it's interesting. Everyone else had a sliding scale.
But
his stuff was always
attached
to World War II.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nick Fury, of all people, is tied...
He's the only one, that,
yeah.
I think, in the Marvel
well,
Universe.
Well, and the other Howling Commandos.
Right.
So, Nick Fury, Dum-Dum Dugan, Gabriel Jones.
Yeah, yeah.
All of those characters are tied...
World War II.
But Captain
True,
America,
but
they get by because
he skips
20
then,
years.
Right, but then with Captain America, when he was unfrozen,
right.
that keeps shifting.
That does shift, though
you know,
not by much.
Well, but it has to, because then if not, then Captain America has been awake since the 1960s. How out of time is he anymore?
But again,
you know?
I guess it has shifted,
because
they keep that as something that happened.
It's tied into when the Avengers
10 years
were
before, ago.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's...
Now, with DC kind of does a couple different things. They keep rebooting their
one,
universe.
They keep rebooting... And rebooting time
but
in their universe.
But they didn't really do a major reboot until the mid-80s. So
no.
I think they kind of were doing the Marvel thing.
Yeah.
And that character... Things are happening to characters, but,
right.
like...
But their biggest sort of fix for how time and aging and characters work and to maintain sort of their full history was the creation of Earth 2.
Yeah.
Earth 2
yeah,
was
yeah,
their
yeah.
big sort of, this is how we deal with Superman getting older,
yeah, yeah.
is there was a universe where Superman was active in the 40s.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
now in the present, he has gray hair, he's married to Lois Lane. Do they have kids?
Yes. Well,
I don't think they had kids.
Well, I'm thinking
in
the story,
Earth 2.
Whatever Happened in the Man of Tomorrow. But that was the ending
yeah.
of the Earth 1 Superman
yeah.
before
Crisis.
For Crisis.
I don't think Earth 2 Superman had kids. Because if he did, they would have been in Infinity Inc. And there were definitely no... There was no Superboy
so.
Or Supergirl.
I don't think so.
So, yeah. But yeah. anywho. But like, that was their sort of solve for, you know, the two Flashes, for all of that.
But see, but they still had the issue of like Barry Allen. Barry Allen was a character until the, you know, from the late 50s into the
mid-80s. But then, but then they kept the sliding scale.
And then they just,
And then, since then, every 3 years, they've rebooted time entirely.
Which is a little exhausting. Which I think is a less successful...
Well, it's a cheat.
It is a cheat.
It's. I mean, I love DC. I love you guys. It's a cheat. Because it, it actually it keeps them from doing stories where their characters age and have to deal with aging.
What was interesting, though, speaking of aging, what's interesting, one of my... Some of the sets of my favorite characters are the Golden Age DC characters. The original Jay Garrick Flash, Hourman, the Atom, all of those guys, and gals. I really love
Liberty Bell.
Liberty Bell. I really love them for whatever whatever reason. And I think you know, and their history was really tied to World War II, much like Nick Fury. And so once they got rid of Earth One, Earth Two, and combined the universes, then they had to kind of explain why Jay Garrick, and Alan Scott and all these guys were not like 100 years old in the 1990s. So they had some sort of energy because they had been trapped in like this
and then pocket universe
and it supplied them with like this kind of life force that kind of kept them younger, but they're still older, and so they could be mentors, they could be have wisdom and things like that. And I really enjoyed that. I really love the idea of history and the weight of history, and that there are all of these stories told and untold behind
and wrestling with what it means for a character to age and what it means for a superhero. And that I'm not a big fan of Marvel's obsession with Wolverine and how they use it, and I haven't read Old Man Logan, but the idea of what is Wolverine going to be at 60? You know, like, that's interesting to me. Like
Well, I mean, there's, like, you know, what was it? The not the Imperius leader. The Maestro. The old,
Old Man Hulk.
Yeah, which I thought was always really interesting. You know, there's a Hulk who had, you know, but it was an indeterminate amount of time in the future. And Hulk had kind of gone insane and power mad and was controlling.
But because
and they've kept that character.
He's kept around, and it's like the idea that I mean, at some point Bruce Banner just will become the Hulk forever, and the Hulk will never die. He can't die, and like that implication of like, I mean, I love characters wrestling with immortality along with mortality, like those sort of and. Those sort of twin peaks we don't get. DC has now sort of cut itself off from. You know, from seeing future generations. I mean, I actually, as weird as Infinity Inc. was, I always loved Infinity Inc.
You know, I mean, I think I was just thinking there is one character that I know of that I haven't read it. Savage Dragon.
Oh right,
that happens. He ages in real time.
In real time,
and I find that a really fabulous idea. But I was thinking of immortality. One of my favorite kind of displays of immortality, of how an immortal character might be, was in the Doctor Who, in the most recent season, The Girl Who Lived.
Oh, I didn't see that
one. Oh, it's great. Because what happens in the episode prior, spoilers for everybody, it's this Viking girl as played by...
Maisie Williams.
Maisie Williams. I was going to use her by her...
Yeah. Arya Stark.
I was going to use her Game of Thrones, her GOT name. Anyway, so Arya Stark is this Viking girl, and stuff happens, and the Doctor has to help her.
Right.
I'm kind of skipping stuff, so if you ever watch it. And he gives her this chip that helps, this alien healing device that heals her from her wounds, but all, it has the side effect of she will probably never, ever die.
Right. That's
so
amazing.
In the next episode, he ends up meeting her again, like, several hundred years later. I think even, like, 1,000 years later. And at this point, she no longer knows her name. She doesn't remember her name. She just refers to herself as me. I'm me. And she has... She's very wealthy. And she has all of these journals. All of these journals. But she doesn't... And every so often, she comes back to these journals because she doesn't remember.
Right.
You know, and it's like the first time I've ever seen a story about an immortal who doesn't remember.
Right.
Because while she has a device, an alien device, keeping her human body alive, she still has a human brain.
Right.
And a human brain will forget things over time.
Yeah.
And so that's what happens. That's what's happened to her.
That's
and
so like, fascinating.
And she's kind of experienced everything in her world. Yeah. You know, she, you know, part of the story is her wanting to leave the Earth.
Yeah.
And, you know, asking the Doctor to help her leave the Earth. But I, but as a display of immortality and the horror of immortality. Because a lot of times it's, I see, and, you know, be it in Star Trek when they meet an immortal character.
Right.
What have you, is like, oh, I'm tired of life.
Right.
I've done all this stuff. But me, she wasn't tired of living.
Right.
But she was tired of her limited experience on Earth.
Right. What's interesting,
and she's trapped there.
That reminds me of one of my favorite immortal characters from Sandman, Hob Gadling.
Oh, right, of course.
Who is kind of the opposite.
Yeah.
In that he, even though he is immortal and feels that full weight, still fears death.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, Hob Gadling is introduced in a total one shot, but then becomes a regular character.
As a
man from the 1300s in England, who
Shakespeare?
it's the 1600s.
Yeah. Because I think wasn't it in that the issue about Midsummer?
No, it's a different issue, but I think he appears in that, or he brings it up, or it comes up.
Something.
So
it's
like the 1500s.
I guess I just have to reread it.
Oh my God, it's such a beautiful story. But a regular person from the 1500s who makes a deal. With Sandman, with the dream, to meet him in the same pub 100 years hence.
Yeah.
And every 100 years they meet for a drink. And the idea is that, you know, at first it's a bet between Dream and his sister Death that eventually this guy will become bored of life and want to die, but he never does.
Yeah.
Despite having terrible things happen to him.
Yeah.
And it's just this great, still totally human character who just keeps living.
Yeah.
And at least once, if not twice, rejects offers from death to die.
Yeah. Yeah, each time he's kind of like, no, I'm not quite
I'm
done.
Not ready. I'm not ready yet.
And I think the immortal character, I'm trying to think of some other immortal characters,
I'll give you one of my favorite depictions of immortality. Hmm. Even though it's a terrible, 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 terrible film.
Tell me how you really feel about it.
I would never read, and I still regret having seen this movie to this day.
Right.
Interview with a Vampire.
Oh.
Has one moment in it that I thought that is amazing and awful.
Yeah.
And I think it's a piece of vampire lore that becomes used in other things.
Uh-huh.
Where, if you remember... and I don't remember which of the two morons in that movie did it, but one of them turns a little girl.
Right, Kirsten Dunst.
Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah.
And there's a great scene where she realizes the weight of what has happened to her because she cuts her hair and it all grows back. Instantly back.
Yeah, yeah.
And she realizes she will never change.
And she'll never be more than a
13. And she'll never be more than a child.
Yeah.
And there's, I can't remember, there's some other lore... Being human, the American version of being human, they're not allowed to turn children.
Right. I think, well...
Because it's deemed cruel since they will never mature.
Right. Admission, I have I've not seen all of them Interview with a Vampire.
It's terrible. Terrible, terrible,
I've
terrible,
seen
terrible,
bits.
Terrible.
I've seen that bit.
You are worse off for having seen any part of it, and I am far worse for having seen all of it.
See, I'm going to rephrase that, because I'm a half glass full guy. I'm better off for only seeing
whatever you've seen has made your life 15% worse.
Yes, but still better than yours.
Oh, yeah, my life is 75% worse for having seen all of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's really bad.
In the theater?
Yeah.
Oh.
At the time, it seemed like it would be a very good thing, and it was not. But that, I mean, in other forms, I mean, we talked about sci-fi, and other forms of fantasy, vampires do wind up bearing most of the weight of, oh crap, it wasn't being human. Sorry, I just realized where I remembered. I shouldn't have remembered it.
No.
Because I've neither seen or read it, and yet I've read all the Wikipedias, and I know... It's
the same
fucking
thing.
Twilight.
Oh.
It's Twilight where it's a crime to turn a child.
I think Twilight's a crime.
It is.
Irony.
Yes. But anyway.
I can't believe you Wikipedia'd Twilight.
Well, I do that for things that I don't actually want to watch, but I'm too curious about. So I want to still be able to judge and know.
Can I Wikipedia Harry Potter?
Yeah. if you don't want to have the greatest reading experience of your life. But, I mean, that's you.
Are you saying the Wikipedia article wouldn't be like reading?
No. No, it would not be.
All right.
But yeah, I mean, those in other fantasy circles, vampires wind up bearing the weight of discussions of mortality and immortality.
Well, there's Frankenstein.
Yeah,
and actually, and very more specifically, the Frankenstein monster of the Universal horror movies.
Okay.
Because obviously, the Frankenstein novel is a one and done kind of thing. It's like I'm in the Arctic and I may live or die. Whatever, Mary Shelley. Boring. No, actually, it's a really great novel. But Frankenstein in the movies, the
Universal monster.
Frankenstein's monster. Thank you. Obviously, it's questions of mortality because it's kind of reanimating parts. But there's also this thing: the monster can't. It seems to not ever die.
Right. But he's so. The classic Universal though is so not like. And I see why they've come back to it. And I haven't watched all of the various versions.
Yeah.
Because he's not. Like, the one from the book is, of course, educated. And articulate.
Yeah.
And while, I am a big Boris Karloff fan, that is just... not Karloff. Yeah, it's Karloff.
Yeah.
He's basically a zombie.
No, but that's not true. You need to watch it.
All right.
He's more like a child. Like, there's this great scene... That's kind of horrific for its time. Like he meets this girl after he's kind of escaped, and she's playing with flowers.
Oh yeah!
And then
he
throws her in because the flowers floated, why not the girl? And then in Bride of Frankenstein, like he's speaking.
Okay.
He's speaking, and
it's been a while since I've seen Bride.
Side note: in the first movie, Boris Karloff, he had dentures, and he took it out to have it looks like his face kind of was more hollow.
Yeah.
But because he had to speak in Bride of Frankenstein, they put it in, so his face looks more.
Oh.
Full. But anyway, in Bride, he's not like articulate like we're articulate.
Fire bad.
but he's like ooh good. Oh, he's like smoking and he's drinking and he wants love. You know.
Right.
So like, it's more of a childlike quality to him. But then like in the next one, Son of Frankenstein, he's a little duller again. But my favorite, and I think it's Son of Frankenstein. Oh, God, I'm going to get them all confused. But at one point, Boris Karloff... not Boris Karloff. Bela Lugosi's character, and I think it is Son of Frankenstein. Or it's like Nephew of Frankenstein. puts his brain inside the monster.
Oh, wow.
But, like, the monster's gone blind. Yeah. So it's Bela Lugosi. and he's, like, trashing the whole place. Yeah, it's whichever one... Wait, no, Son of Frankenstein, so that's Boris Karloff. It's the one after that, because it's Lon Chaney. And he's like... Bela Lugosi. I keep saying Boris Karloff. Is Lon Chaney stumbling around this room with Bela Lugosi's voice coming out?
Oh my God! Which is a weird. The world's worst convention.
What, Bela Lugosi?
No, I mean of the like, my brain or my soul is in your body,
right.
My voice issues forth.
Yeah.
As it's just. Guys,
well, we got to make it clear how
that's
working.
That's not how that works. That's not how bodies work.
That's not what TV tells me.
Yeah. TV lies. It's full of lies.
You know what just floated through my mind of a kind of dealing with mortality and learning that at a young age?
Right.
E.T. Which I have not seen E.T. since the movie theater, and I suspect when E.T. and Elliot are ill.
Yeah.
I suspect that freaked me out as a kid.
Yeah.
And I have not returned to the movie since.
Yeah.
But, like, Elliot learning about death.
Yep.
In that moment. You know what I mean? And, like, I think there's something to that. Like, I have distinct... And I literally have not seen it since the movie theater. I have a distinct memory of them in with the plastic around them.
And he dies.
And, like, it's just like...
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
You know,
my younger brother had a similar reaction when he saw it when he was about 8.
Yeah.
We watched E.T. and he hated the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
He felt so betrayed when E.T. died that he refused, like, even though we were like, but E.T.'s back, he's okay. He's like, no.
His heart's glowing.
He was like, no. No, you killed him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's especially for like what is ostensibly a child's movie, and it seems very like child friendly.
Yeah.
That is a very dark and traumatic turn.
It is. But I think a lot of 80s movies for kids were very...
They were.
Were dark. At they were really points, dark. Like, Flight of the Navigator, like, yeah. You just skip 10 years of, like, A, your parents lost their child for 10 years. They thought he was dead. Then you come, you're that child, and you come back, and the world has moved on without you.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's dark. Oh, I mean, the 80s so were...
A great time.
It was a dark time.
Right. Did you know Turn On Your Heart Light by Neil Diamond?
Yep.
It's about E.T. Yeah.
I know. I know. I'm up on my Neil Diamond.
I didn't do our sponsor.
Oh, well, get it in.
I get it in. Do you like playing with marbles?
I do. I do like playing with marbles.
Then you should get Tootles Marbles. The finest marbles in all of the country. Handcrafted.
Yeah.
Made with the sharpest of eyes.
Ooh.
If you can find them, get Tootles Marbles.
Oh, I'll be looking for some marbles all night.
All night long.
You know what's interesting, just speaking about aging and the use of it, and the Song of Ice and Fire.
I was waiting for you to either bring that up or Harry Potter.
Yes, no, song. Well, Harry Potter is different because it's a coming of age thing, and the great glory of those books is watching the characters age in almost real time, which is nice.
There was this theory going around about Harry Potter, about the boy who lived.
Yeah.
That the idea that actually Harry Potter would be immortal.
Oh yeah, I love that theory.
And I think that would have been a really
cool... That the only person who could kill him was Voldemort.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
I think that's been poo-pooed, but it's still a good one.
Yeah. JK, get on it.
Yeah. But yeah, no,
Song of
Ice and Fire. I mean, the thing that's interesting, and this is more about the, like, the creation of it.
Uh-huh.
And
George R.R. Martin's immortal.
George R.R. Martin, he is not immortal, unfortunately. Keep writing,
right,
George.
Faster.
We still believe in you. We still believe. But he had wanted the book to take over a much longer period.
Yeah.
He had wanted, because there were things that he needed the characters to be older to deal with.
Because, like,
Jon
Snow in the book, he's like 13 when the book starts.
Yeah, when the book starts, Jon Snow's 15. Rob is 16. No, Rob is 14.
Yeah.
Because Snow's the oldest. Snow is 15. Rob is 14.
Yeah.
Arya's 11.
Yeah, I mean, these are incredibly young characters.
Very young characters, and they're going to be required to do some very adult things.
Yeah.
And so he's, at this point in the book, he's kind of elided some time to get the characters there.
Because I was surprised, because wasn't one of the problems the delay of whichever book? Because wasn't he going to, like, he was just going to skip ahead?
He wanted to just take some time.
Yeah.
And, like,
but he felt like there had events that needed to be
He didn't want to be bogged down in a lot of exposition for half of a book.
Right.
Explaining a bunch of things that had happened in that time
gap.
And
talking about the food that they ate.
And the food and the clothes that they wore. Don't forget the clothes. I mean, that's an interesting world in dealing with sort of time and aging. Weird sense of time.
The sense of time, because, we rely on seasons.
Right.
And the seasons aren't in A Song of Fire and Ice and Fire.
Ice and Fire.
The seasons are, they're not regular.
No.
You know,
they last for decades.
But they could also last a shorter period. Like, they're not, like...
There's no rhyme or reason they last... I mean, when the book begins, it had been summer for close to 10 years,
and that was, like, the longest summer that they had for a long time. Are there, because I'm a TV watcher of it, are there any characters that there are except for, like, the children of the forest? There's no immortal.
No
characters.
There are no immortal characters.
But are there characters that are dealing with age and mortality? Like, I mean
there's
not necessarily
aging.
There's aging, but there's not necessarily...
Everyone's dealing with mortality.
Everyone's dealing with mortality left
and
right.
It's a Song of Ice and Fire.
Right.
Mortality's on everyone's mind.
When death knocks.
I mean, in many ways, it's more a series of coming-of-age stories than necessarily a thing, especially after book one.
Yeah.
Because most of Ned Stark's story is really about aging.
Yeah.
And mortality and your legacy.
And how the world is changing around. Like,
exactly.
That's what he can't deal with, is that the world has changed.
The world
and
has changed.
He has...
Yeah, and he has been removed from it for so long.
Yeah. I mean, the series seems to be kind of a passing of the torch, kind of. Like, right. It's all about the younger generation. Like,
right.
The grown-ups have fucked it up.
Yeah.
And the younger generations are paying for
it. Exactly. And the lessons that they've learned and the ways that they can make it better.
Yeah.
So it's interesting in that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, and it covers, you know, obviously the world of it is so much larger and covers so much more history.
How much time has passed since from the first book to the current?
That's a good question. A
couple weeks?
No, it's been about, well, each book takes about a year, because that's the other thing about the season thing, because we're so used to the season being regular and being tied to the year, is that, like, it's been at least 3 years since the beginning. Since Ned died.
Yeah. Oh, I was thinking about
at least it may be longer. Might be more. Might be 4 or 5.
This is a total change of subject. Uh-huh. I was thinking about demarking of time.
Yeah.
How the Star Wars expanded universe? They had all these novels and stretched far, far into the future.
Right.
But that for whatever reason, if you look at the chronology in the books, it was always ABY 20 years after ABY.
Right.
That they were marking it by after the Battle of Yavin.
Yep.
Which I find very funny. It's like marking time like from the Battle of the Bulge.
Exactly.
It's like it was a battle. But it wasn't, like, a significant... I mean, it was a big battle, but it wasn't, like...
It was a pretty significant battle.
Why not the Battle of Endor? Like, wouldn't that be a better, like...
That's true. The Battle of Endor is much better...
When we actually killed the Emperor. Yeah. Like, but, like, no, it's like, ABY 4, that's the battle. That's actually the most significant.
Yeah.
I find that strange.
Well...
But that's not about aging immortality.
No.
That's just about time.
How do you demark time?
Yeah. Oh, you wanted to talk about the messed up, why aren't Star Trek characters...
Well, I mean, the other thing about Star Trek...
We can wrap up there.
We'll wrap up there. I mean, the other thing that I do love about Star Trek, and the thing that I feel like has to scramble their sense of aging and time, or should, is that so many of them live their life faster than the speed of light. And they use the hand-wavy thing of subspace...
Oh, that's going to be my defense.
It's to like, fix the relativistic effects, but... There have to still be relativistic effects.
But I don't think there are. I think literally they're traveling through subspace, which is below space.
But it just doesn't. Like,
it's below space.
I don't understand how any doctor functions giving people physicals. A basic physical for, like, Jim Kirk, he's got to be hundreds of years old.
Well, but they're traveling below space, Jay.
Stop saying that. Those are not real words. It just...
No, here's space. Here's below space.
Like, it's just... I don't know. It's a thing that, like, it breaks my brain when I stop and I think about it for just to, like, talk about aging and mortality.
But wouldn't that apply to hyperspace in Star Wars?
Exactly. But I feel like hyperspace in Star Wars, because their sense of time is so much more funky, it doesn't bump me as much as the regularity of star dates... And the idea that they go to and from Earth and to and from these other things.
And they're talking on the phone.
And they're talking on the phone in real time, which is bad enough. But, like, they're still traveling all these distances instantaneously. But it's not instantaneously.
It takes some time.
And that's the thing. It's like, I don't understand when they're like, it's a thread that once you pull, it all starts to unravel. When you think, okay, so you're on the deck of the Starship Enterprise.
Yes.
You're traveling in, let's say, Star Trek Beyond to the Yorktown.
Yeah.
Which is a fixed point.
Yeah.
That has some way of measuring time.
Right.
And you say it's going to take us 4 hours.
Yeah.
To travel there.
Yeah.
At warp 10, which is like...
Below space.
But you're still traveling faster than the speed of light.
All right.
So... This is the part that breaks my brain. And I don't know how you square all this.
Uh-huh.
So you're traveling at impulse power.
Right.
From wherever you are. There is light in space that is bouncing off of your ship.
Right.
If someone on the Yorktown has a telescope and is looking at that spot in space...
Uh-huh.
Okay, just bear with me.
Right.
The light from that spot starts making its way to the Yorktown.
Right.
Which is light years away.
Right, so they wouldn't see it.
For years. You take off.
Yeah.
In your ship.
Right.
You travel 4 hours later.
Yeah.
That person at the Yorktown sees you show up.
Right.
4 hours later, and now you're there.
Right.
And then, 5, 6, 7, 40 years later,
yep.
they look in their telescope, and they see you.
That's correct.
Where you, and now it all breaks my brain.
The universe is a magical place.
We can go with that.
No, but
I think that would actually be how it would work. Their ages are just, their insides have to just be scrambled.
If you ignore the relativistic effects of aging,
right?
I think it would, what you're describing, well, yes. actually would make sense.
It totally makes sense.
But the problem is, like, what you would
you
be
have
seeing,
to ignore the relativistic effects
right,
of
right.
aging.
But what you would see is like, if you're a telescope like watcher
yeah.
on the Yorktown, you would just be all like the whole galaxy
yeah.
around you would be lit up of. Former starships
I know.
Moving
it's
in other
so,
places.
It's just weird to me.
How would you like to be the air traffic controller?
Oh my
like,
God. How
is
do
that
you
ship
know?
There? Is that ship there? I don't
yeah.
know. Yeah.
Yeah. Or were they there 40 years ago?
But I'll say this. Is the Yorktown in a fixed position? Can you be in a fixed position in space?
Oh, that's a good point.
What is the relative position of you, the observer?
And there we go. And now it all just devolves into a muck.
You know what it is?
What?
It's just a TV show, man.
It's just a TV show. Good point.
I still like my excuse better. Below space.
That is not your excuse. That is the official excuse of the Star Trek universe.
I guess I'm just an official Star Trek guy.
You are.
I'm a tool of the man.
You're a tool of the man.
God, I wish. Oh, it'd be so awesome. All right, I think that's
right.
enough.
I think we've exhausted this one.
Thanks again to Heidi.
Thank you, Heidi.
If anybody ever has any question, Deep Cut Nerd Pod.
Yep.
At Twitter.
All
right.
Please do.
And Jay, again, is very sorry about that missing month. Please explain it to your boss.
I am really sorry, everybody.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. I wish that I knew what I know.